I'll make a start today. Thank you, councillors, staff and public gallery for the meeting on November 2023. So for our safety announcements, evacuation details and information are located on the wall near the entry to the chambers. In an emergency alarm sound, wardens will assist with your evacuations from the building. If directed, please evacuate in the car and orderly manner by the reception area. Go directly to the evacuation point in the car park beside the town hall. Declare the meeting open at 3:04 PM. Attendance and apologies. From looking around the table, I'd say that we're all here, so there'll be no apologies. Acknowledgement of country. I begin today by acknowledging the Palitur and Panihia past peoples, the traditional owners and custodians of the land on which we gather today, and pay my respects to elders past and present. I extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples here today. Moving on, would somebody like to do the confirmation of minutes? Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Councillor Dornoff, thank you. A seconder, please, Councillor House. Any discussions, councillors? If not, put your vote. All those in favour, please say aye and raise your hand. That is unanimous. Thank you, councillors. Declarations of interest.
Mr Mayor, we have one declaration of interest from Councillor Kelly relating to tender assessments in our closed session of today's meeting.
Thank you, Ben. Others, councillors? Thank you. So you've got councillor workshop reports, which are listed in the agenda for noting. Then we then move on to mayor and councillor reports. While that comes up, I would actually like to acknowledge Stephanie Trithewey has been awarded the Tasmanian of the Year as presented last Friday. And I want to take this opportunity as Mayor of Meander Valley to congratulate her and hope she does really well at the main event in Canberra. So again, my acknowledgement and appreciation for what Steph's done there. So thank you. Open up for councillors. Councillor Dadman.
Thank you, Mayor. My congratulations to Stephanie Trethaway as well. But I also wanted to take a moment to acknowledge the Westbury Show Society for a successful and, I believe, record-breaking in terms of attendance 160th show. It was a great day out. I saw yourself, Mayor, Steph, Anne-Marie, volunteered on the gate, and if others were there, I didn't see you, but that's because there were so many people there. And it was a really great day for the whole community and for the people coming from right around the district and beyond to join in on this great family agricultural show. I also want to acknowledge my friend Judy Kilby, who launched her book, The Show Goes On, which commemorates the Westbury Show, the significance of it to our municipality. And I know she put a lot of work into that, so my thanks to her on behalf of this community, because it will be a valuable asset in recording our history.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Loader.
Thank you, Mayor. I would like to commend our Meander Valley staff on the recent Lift Local program that's not quite finished yet. I've heard nothing but really fabulous feedback from people, particularly people who wouldn't ordinarily be able to participate in some of these activities due to cost. The fact that it's been really geared towards people with disability has been really appreciated, and I just keep hearing, gee, I hope this is going to happen again. So kudos to our community wellbeing team on putting together such a varied program, and yes, I hope we can do it again too. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Councillor Loader. Totally agree. Anything else, councillors? No, we should acknowledge then that we've got the Bicentenary coming up this weekend for Westbury. So hopefully it'll be a great day. Hopefully the weather holds out, even though we would, sorry, 2 days, my apologies, Saturday and Sunday. Hopefully, as much as I would love it to rain as a farmer, hopefully it's sunshine and the crowd turns up. But nothing else, councillors? No.
Thank you.
Right, petitions.
No petitions received, Mr Mayor.
Community representations.
No community representations today.
Righto. We're then heading into public question time. So when we get into question time, for those in the public gallery, there will be 3 minutes that I'll allow. At 2 minutes and 30, I will ding the bell, which gives you 30 seconds to hopefully wrap up. I am usually pretty lenient, but I would like people to be stay within that time frame if possible. But anyway, we'll see how it goes. We have some questions already on without notice.
That's right.
Somebody going to read? You're going to read that? Yes.
That's right, Mr. Mayor. We received one question without notice in advance of the meeting, and I'll ask the Manager of Governance and Performance to read that so on their behalf. They couldn't make it to our meeting today. He's asking individually.
And you'll have to have a microphone, Wes. Sorry, you'll have to grab a microphone.
This is a question from Sean Manners. Question one. On Saturday, 3rd of September 2022, a climate change youth forum was hosted by Meander Valley Council. What was the outcome of that forum and what has happened since?
Thank you for the question. Yeah, I'll just go through obviously what happened at the forum and then what we've been working on since that time. So at the forum, 9 young people between 14 and 24 attended. There was also additional 4 adult mentors. They were coming from across Meander Valley, from Prospect Vale, Deloraine, Meander and Kimberley. Dr. Kim Beasy, Dr. Sheridan Emery, facilitated that. Our presentation was delivered by Jessica Robbins, and council staff provided support. The forum was delivered with an overall theme of hope and aim to promote innovative thinking on young people and engaging them in local solutions to climate change and sustainability. They were given the opportunity to work together on theory of change projects. And they did come up with 5 projects, each reflecting particular young people's perspectives. their focus areas were around waste, housing, farming, electric transport and community connectivity. Overall, it was a demonstration that young people definitely think holistically. And a lot of what was coming out was kind of broader issues for communities and society in general. So climate change was really just one part of the way that they're looking at the world at the moment. as a result, it was kind of really difficult to kind of hone that down into a direct deliverable. What we did was we supported some of those key young peoples with leadership qualities to present to council workshop on the 27th of September. And from that workshop, it was suggested that we support young people to really hone in on building community connection. and also to try and find ways that we can engage them in real hands-on practical restoration projects. Unfortunately, a lot of the leadership, the young people in those leadership roles have been difficult, connections been difficult to maintain. They've moved away from the valley through work and university and things like that. But I guess what we've been doing as a team, a wellbeing team, and our actions have been kind of focused more organisationally. So we've been working on our youth participation project as a way to engage young people to co-design activities. And we're now successfully engaged with Hagley Primary School, Westbury Primary School, Deloraine Primary School, Deloraine High School. So our wellbeing officer is working with the leadership groups there to look at activities, not just climate change, but community activities and creating community connections. One of the outcomes of the 27th workshop, the workshop on the 27th was considering how the purchase of the wild wood in Deloraine could work into some of those hands-on projects. And obviously there's been quite a bit of work involved in finalising that process and setting up the Landcare Group. So the wellbeing team, we've been supporting the Landcare Group. Obviously a little bit of skilling up of the Landcare members, but also connecting the Landcare members into the school groups. So they now have a youth representative that has been involved with the Deloraine Primary School Group. And they are looking at the possibility of working with Landcare to provide some kind of holiday activity in and around the Wildwood. But that one's a work in progress. We've organisationally, again, we've explored fairly thoroughly Volunteer Tasmania's Youth Volunteer Army project as a way to establish a direct connection for young people to be involved in hands-on sustainability projects, but that's proved quite difficult because of staffing issues, really. The project officer for that project has gone. There's been three different project officers, and the way that the project needs to be implemented is a little bit prohibitive as well. It has to run directly through a school or through a jobs hub. So the schools, Deloraine High School, Prospect High School, have had a lot of issues over the last 6 to 8 months or so with staffing. So it's been difficult to kind of work with them about implementing a project. And I believe that Volunteer Tasmania and the NEB Hub have started conversations around it. But I don't know where that's at currently. In terms of the connections for the Youth Participation Project, working with those schools and the Wildwood Landcare Group, the real focus at the moment is trying to get something established for either the school holidays or for Youth Week in April next year.
Thanks, Nate.
No worries.
For the purposes of the audio recording, could you tell us your name and description, your job title, please?
I'm Nate Austin, the Manager of Community Wellbeing.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Second question.
At the October 2023 meeting, it was asked, what specific actions has Meander Valley Council taken to reduce carbon emissions and thus MVC's carbon footprint? Jonathan Harmy, General Manager, advised that Council's undertaking actions such as audits of Council's building efficiency, replaced streetlights with alternative LED bulb technology, implemented electric vehicle charging points in Westbury and Deloraine, installed solar panels at Prospect Vale Park, recently trialled an electric ride-on lawnmower technology. In which years and months were those actions taken?
Yep, so through you, Mr. Mayor, Jonathan Harmy, General Manager. So audits of council building efficiency was through the Local Government Energy Efficiency Program, completed in March 2015. Replaced street lights with alternative LED bulb technology. That was a substantial project, completed June 2018. Implemented electric vehicle charging points, Westbury and Deloraine. Completed in October 2018. Installed solar panels at Prospect Vale Park. Completed August 2017. Trialled electric lawnmower technology, and that was conducted in September 2023.
Thank you, Jan. Thank you for that. So moving on, open for public questions. If there are, Helen, you've already passed some in, so if you'd like to stand up. Thank you. I think it is.
Yep.
You didn't tap it, Matthew. Most people tap it to see if it's going.
I like to have people do it for me.
I'd like to make it clear that I'm not here as a member of Extinction Rebellion or a supporter, despite being outed in the Examiner for supporting them. I'm here as a concerned citizen and a climate activist. I had an invitation through email to health and climate agenda from Tasmanian Council supporting climate healthy and resilient communities. I'm surprised that no councillor attended that. I'm attending one in Launceston later this month. And it's important because it's well documented that there are increasing instances and worsening temperatures of climate change related extreme heat events is leading to increased occurrences of heat stroke in children, the elderly, and workers in poorly air conditioned buildings or who work outside. Later research has identified that high humidity also impacts health because bodies sweat, cannot sweat, and cool down. So if you're in high humidity, your body cannot sweat, and that's the body's cooling mechanism. Heat waves also have additional problems of decreasing the ability to sleep and to rest. And this applies to other animals. We're animals like cats, dogs, sheep, cattle. In fact, any other living creature has the same problems with increasing heat. I'm asking, what strategies is Meander Valley Council considering to protect its rain barriers from extreme heat events?
Helen, I think we'll take the question on notice. I guess it's quite simply, Council doesn't have a formal strategy or policy around that topic in its own right. So we'll have a look and see if we can identify anything that we do undertake in the community that's relevant to your question.
Thanks, John. I would be delighted to give you information if you needed it. Second question. I noticed that the Audit Committee had their meetings using Zoom technology. There are many advantages of direct broadcasting council meetings to ratepayers and other interested people. It provides transparency and accountability. Communities can see their councillors in action. It's a more accessible way for people to attend meetings without travelling long distances in order to participate, and it encourages attendees at council meetings to be accountable for their actions, their behaviour, and their comments. As the council already has Zoom capability, will the council make the meetings more accessible to more people by having future meetings on Zoom?
Yep, thank you for that one. So as far as meetings go on Zoom, we as councillors under the delegation of the government can't actually Zoom into our council meetings now, but I understand that that's not the question that you're asking. We have an item coming up at our next workshop where we will consider the broadcasting of council meetings. When we looked at this 2 years ago, probably 3 years ago in the COVID period, it was actually cost prohibitive for us in these actual chambers to do that. But technology has moved on in 3 years' time. So we are considering that and we'll consider that at the next workshop.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Helen. Any other questions? Public question time? Yes, Craig.
Craig's in Tad for the Mandy Valley Gazette. I have a follow-up question to the question I asked around protection of heritage assets. The response from the Director of Development and Regulatory Services indicated that the council strategic plan will work closely with councillors and the community. The question was, when might that happen?
Good question. Over to you, gentlemen.
I'll look, a comment from me, Craig, is probably on a needs basis, and as issues are regularly identified within the community about strategic planning, so it's not one size fits all, but I'll ask Natasha, who's our acting Director of Development and Regulatory, to provide a response for you.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, it was discussed at a previous council meeting, I understand, and it was considered that we would look to have that item listed for the annual plan for the 24-25 financial year. So it is on our radar at the moment. However, that will be reviewed at the end.
So the follow-up question, so I'm talking about the protection like of heritage precinct areas, so like in Carrick, Georgian areas, Carrick, Deloraine, etc. So the question, so that answers like in 2004. The follow-up question is really, it says that the strategic plan will work closely with councillors and the community, etc., etc. What is the process to follow? So since the heritage thematic report was only 2004 and the heritage inventory report was completed in 2006, what processes do members of the community follow to ensure or work with council to work on the protection of heritage values in our community? Is it community led or is it council led? As in one systems case.
Good question, Craig.
Thank you.
Make a contribution on that
subject? Yeah, if you would.
It might be helpful. If I may, Rodney Simpill, councillor. Back in the early mid 2000s, a study was done over 2 years by Professor Davies from Sydney, and it identified hundreds and hundreds of what was colloquially called B grade assets or local assets for heritage. 75 were recommended for placement on the state heritage register, of which I think 37 ended up on that, the rest weren't. There was a huge backlash at the time from the community about, because essentially they were using the same 7 criteria under the Local Historical Cultural Heritage Act as what would get you on state register, except the bar had been lowered considerably. And so the feeling in the community at the time was, we don't want this local listing. And sadly, the upshot of that is, for all these years since, 20-odd years now, it's coloured where we've come from as a council, and it's hard to sort of override that inertia, in my opinion. Council eventually, in that process, took a lot of flak at the time for what happened and the manner it happened, and they wrote out to all those who'd been identified as having properties relevant to that, which included me, and they did it as a they were going to set it up in the scheme as a voluntary arrangement. They got 20 responses out of those 550, I think it was, for the local listing, and so it was abandoned. But as I say, it has in no small measure coloured the way forward, but absolutely I believe that we are having, things like the Elm Tree and Carrick is a very good example of where having no significant tree register, etc., is counterproductive. So we need to overcome that, what happened 20 years ago, to be able to move on, in my opinion. you can't say that there are no heritage relevant matters in the municipality, because every dwelling or property that is registered on the state register is covered by that. But as we saw in Westbury, was some significant trees. They were omitted from the listing, and so we got, in my view, a poor outcome. But I just wanted to tend to that info as to sort of, in a sense, not trying to defend it, but how we've sort of got to where we are today versus some other councils that have been far more proactive in heritage precincts and all those sorts of things.
Yep.
So, thanks, Councillor.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, Jonathan Harmy, General Manager. So just specifically to your questions, Craig, under the current scheme, there is no heritage protection. So that's your first point. And the second point you made, if there were going to be changes to that, it would be a council-led process rather than a community-led process. And a point of clarity, the comment that Natasha made around the 2024-25 annual plan target relates to an issue that was raised at a previous council meeting around Westbury and specifically the Village Green. So.
Thanks, Jim. Any other questions? Public question time. Yes.
Good afternoon, Nick Camino from Hagley. Just a couple of things. Firstly, just talking to Carissa Bosco at the Hagley General Store today, just asked me to ask this. Is Councillor aware of the issue of mould on the children's play permit at the Hagley Recreation Ground? I have attached photos which I've emailed. This mould makes the equipment unfit for purposes, unsafe for children to play on. Adam and Carissa kindly organising the Hagley Community Christmas Party again this year and asking if Council would likely be cleaning the play equipment and if it would be done, likely to be done prior to the Community Christmas Party.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, thanks for the question. I guess these sorts of issues are raised regularly by community members relating to maintenance requests and those sorts of things on our infrastructure. So they can be lodged online, they can be lodged in person or over the telephone. So we'll receive yours, the one that you've mentioned there today, Annette, but that would be the proper mechanisms for members of the community to provide those to us, and our Great Works team will action those in a short time.
Yep. Thanks for raising it.
Thank you.
Matthew's going to make a comment. Turn it on, Matthew, please.
Yes, through you, Mr. Mayor, and thanks, General Manager, for his response. That particular issue, and obviously it's a shaded area where the play equipment is, and we do pressure clean that site every year. I believe it's probably been done today. We're on our way around.
Yeah.
At the moment, pressure clean. So I think it's today they're actually down there. Right. Well, I passed the guy with the pressure cleaner on his vehicle heading towards Hagley earlier today. So hopefully it has been today.
Thank you so much. Secondly, because it's my anniversary. So it's now 12 months since I stood here and asked for a dump point to be installed at Westbury, and that was for a second time. It's actually been 4 years and 8 months since we first asked for one in March 2019. It's been 4 years and 2 months, September 2019, since Council tentatively planned for installation at Westbury Recreation Ground, which didn't materialise. It's been 5 months since the Council approved and allocated $20,000 for the dump point installation. Yet still, and I refer to my question on notice, there are still no updates to report on this project, no timeline, no proposed site, and I assume no communication with the CMCA about provision of the unit. So we're now heading into December, so we're all winding down for Christmas, followed by summer holidays in January. I'm advised in the community that things are progressing. But how so? And if this is the case, why is the information not disclosed? The apathy and impotence of this matter strongly indicates that tourism is not a priority for this council. Yandy Valley is actually in an enviable position, being a close neighbour to the terminal for the Spirits of Tasmania, which are consistently booked out with tourists wanting to come to Tasmania, and there are bigger spirits coming next year, and that means more visitors. Meander Valley is one of their first stops. A proactive council will be using its own initiative in installing dump points right throughout this municipality where tourists camp to entice visitors to the area and retain them for longer periods of time without having to be asked. There is only one dump point in the entire municipality of Deloraine. They could be at Chudley, Meander, Mole Creek, Bracknell, and of course at Westbury. The average camper toilet requirements, that requires emptying every 3 to 4 days, and it's impractical to have to travel significant distances to do this, so our tourists just move on. Having caravaned extensively most recently on a 4-month trip to outback New South Wales and Queensland, everywhere we stay, no matter how remote, had a dump point, and on some occasions they had more than one. So another peak tourism season passes us by without this vital, most basic, primary and central piece of infrastructure to cater for Tasmania's RV travelling tourists. So my question is, what is Meander Valley Council doing to capitalise from these self-contained tourist travelling RVs? What is Council's vision, plans, policy with regards to self-contained tourists? Thank you.
Thanks, Annette.
So around, Jonathan Harmick, General Manager. So around self-contained RVs, Council's quite interested in the caravan park area in Deloraine. It's working with community members around formalising arrangements for that going forward. So that's a commitment that our council has shown for that area. We also have an overflow area that we manage in Deloraine. Prefer that customers use the riverbank area, obviously. Understand, Annette, that you're a business owner within that market. I know that because I've met with you previously about that. The dates that you've listed around the dump point in Westbury are that your business, you've shown interest in the area. I guess our council as a group committed to a dump point in June this year. So that was a recent decision and a commitment that we have made, and our infrastructure team is working through the best location for that because we don't want it to have a negative impact on our residents. We want to make sure that it's accessible and it achieves the outcomes that you are desiring from it. Okay, so that's where we are currently at with that project. It has been on our books for a few months rather than the 2019 date that you initially stated. So there's a few things we're doing. Obviously, we have the Great Western Tiers Tourist Visitor Information Centre in Deloraine, where our officers and up to 30 employees at any given time do a great job of providing information to visitors in our community as well. So there's a few things, and they also discuss bookings for the Deloraine area as well for overnight RV. So there's a few self-contained RV issues that we've considered in the past and currently are managing.
Thanks, Annette. Any other questions from the gallery? Yeah.
Good afternoon, my name's Steve Gregory. I'm the president of the Westbury Garden Club, it's in the Westbury Men's Shed, and show coordinator. My question, and it's more of a process type thing, in the council annual plan, it says, understanding that the community strategic plan, it's a process of community engagement, and I don't understand that process, so I'd like to know if anyone work into that. And then it says all sectors of the community need to work on the parts relevant to them. The scams can only act where it has a role. So I'm trying to understand what that actually means, how the community get to understand that they need to work on something that we don't really know sort of what it is. So it's trying to understand the writings of the council and how the plans work, because when I then read into informing, engaging our community, it says one of the annual projects is develop and implement a communication and engagement strategy. There's no end dates on these sorts of things, and with the next plan coming up for next year, I'm just trying to work out how community service groups get involved in the community's strategic plan. And then when we go into the actual community strategic plan, I don't see if there's any regional plan. I'm not sure how council works. Like, you write a plan, but then how does it break down to what's going to happen in Westbury? Westbury, Deloraine, Westbury, Deloraine, Hadley. Is there a regional sort of plan for what goes on and what's going to happen in the community? And the community has a role to play. We've got to understand what we need to understand. Everyone in the community can sit back and complain about things not happening, but we need to know the process and how we have input into council. Like, this is the first meeting I've been to. I've been here 5 years. So how do we get that message out to people without having too much? The year before, I tried to get all the 20 service groups together, what we actually did in the town hall, with the view of trying to invigorate volunteers in Westbury. The strategy was simple, but it didn't really work. We only got about 6 people coming through, so it was a communications thing as well. All the community groups are struggling for volunteers. We all know that as the community groups age. And what I'd like to know is how we go forward in partnering with the council, getting the community groups together to help have input or understand council so that we know where we're going to go. If the community strategic plan is a 10-year planning and it's due next year, what engagement process, is there going to be an engagement process? How does all that work? And does it involve Rotary Lions or the service communities in each of the major townships? Or how do we get those service groups together? We had thoughts where it might be Rotary look after Girl Guides and Scouts, Show looks after Park Run and someone else. So council hasn't got 20 service groups coming, but we need a strategy so that there's input from the community through driven leadership, not just people having little bits of go. So I'm just trying to work out, and it's just a point of notice at some stage, just so that I understand, or other community groups more importantly understand. Because when I talk to Rotary and Lions, they're not aware of these plans, hardly anyone is. So it's just basically how we engage with the community.
Appreciate you coming forward and asking that question. There's not many people actually ask those questions. So, and John's going to answer them for you.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I'll try and simplify some of that for you if I can attempt to. So Council's Community Strategic Plan is a 10-year document. It's established in the Local Government Act that we are required to have a plan. And as you've said, ours is due for renewal. So we're looking for a new plan. We're about to commence a project of how we coordinate and create that. And a large component is getting feedback from our community members. All of the groups that you have mentioned there have been identified to be included in that process. So I think you said Rotary, Lions in different townships, the Men's Sheds, the Westbury Agricultural Society. So that process is going to occur commencing in early 2024. So we need to have, our goal is that we'll have our new plan in place by December 2024, and there are various steps that we're required to take to achieve that. In that plan, it identifies 3 roles that council has in the community. I think off the top of my head, they are provider. So we provide services and infrastructure to the community. Facilitator, where we are working with other groups within the community to achieve an outcome, and advocate. So where we aren't the provider or the facilitator, but we think it's important to the community and we are asking for other levels of government or stakeholders to assist in delivering that. So they're the roles that you spoke to. The other strategy that you spoke about was our annual plan, which again is required under the Local Government Act, and it's a one-year plan. It's a commitment of the actions that we're going to undertake in the forthcoming 12 months. So that's a one-year plan, and the strategic plan is a 10-year plan. Just around, you asked about a township plan, for want of a better word. We don't have one. It may be something we can consider in the future, but we currently don't have a plan for each of our townships, so that doesn't exist. The process, so we've recently workshopped our elected members and employees have identified a whole raft of community groups that we plan to engage with. We haven't set the timing of the dates of when they are going to occur or the structure around those engagement sessions, but the, as I said, the groups that you spoke to will be included in that. And they may not all be together at one point in time. There is likely to be instances of us going to community groups and then community groups coming to us for a more formal meeting. So a combination of different ways that we will engage. Some will be in person, some may be phone as well. So I think that's probably all.
Yep. Thanks, Jim. Any other questions? If not, for all those who have asked questions today, could you please email a written copy for our minutes to the OGM at mvc.tas.gov.au by tomorrow morning, or you can handwrite your questions on a clipboard that's outside, if possible, please. Thank you. Councillor question time. No question notes have been received. Councillor Temple.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just my usual relating to a proposed prison development.
So just on that, John, yes, there's been nothing formally received to myself, apart from we did have a briefing at our last workshop by the Department of Justice for all the councillors. So I don't think I haven't seen anything else since then.
So through you, Mr. Mayor, just making a note that all of our councillors were present at that workshop discussion. They all interacted with the Department of Justice and had the opportunity to ask questions themselves of the department at that point in time.
Councillors, any other questions? I've got one. Following on Annette's comments, what is the timeline for a dump point? I know you said we looked at it in June, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but where are we at, Dino? Have we progressed anymore? Because, you know, as Annette said, we keep talking about it, but I'd just like a bit of a time frame if possible. Not to put you on the spot, Dino, but you're on the spot.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Dino DePaoli, Director of Infrastructure. Yes, we have progressed it. We're looking at a alternate. We're looking at two sites at the moment. I can't commit to a time frame. I don't believe that's good for the team at the moment, given the number of priority projects we have on the go. But we do have some plans that I'd like to bring back to workshop in November. So
good.
Just to that point, okay. The council will have a look where we're going with it.
Thank you, Dino.
Thank you.
So, a workshop in November. Very good. Any other questions, councillors? Take that as no. Very good. All right, moving on. So, in planning matters, council acts as a planning authority under the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, and there is a following list of what applies. So, we have a planning authority item, which is 744 and 943 Burleigh Road, Westbury. We have three representatives at the moment. So, I'll ask you to come forward, and you'll have 3 minutes to address council. And unfortunately, this is not a debate, so you can ask question, make statement, but we can't respond as much as some of us would like to. So, first off, I've got Stephen Danson. Just walk along.
I'm Stephen Danson. Just regarding the plan development, I live out of Burleigh and they're going to take a fair bit of my bank. I'm just wondering if there's been any geological surveys done there. What's under that hill? Am I going to lose my whole front paddock? Is it going to slide down there? Is there rock under there? Will that cause vibration? up into my dwelling and caused some cracks in my house. Has there been anything done on drainage? Is there any plan? I didn't see anything on drainage in the area. Of all of a sudden, all this drainage has been there for years and years. They're all going to back up and fill people's paddocks up with water. I'm assuming that the driveways are getting moved up because I've requested that I want a truck to be able to get in my driveway, get off the road into my driveway. I'm assuming now they're going to take trees out. Are those trees going to be put back in? Or the trees that are growing on the top of my hill now holding all the soil together, is it just all going to wash away? And finally, just the road itself is just a piece of garbage anyway. Honestly, people drive it. The seepage is not... my opinion on the whole thing is to try and get it up to standard, they're going to have 500 mil on each of the road, don't worry about the rest of it. So really, it makes one, ticks one box, not the rest of them. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. Now, I'm not playing with my phone, I'm just resetting my stopwatch, so bear with me. Alexander Gorman.
Alex Gorman, Solomon Road. We have a small property of about 3,000 acres on the Birrellay Road, dissected by the Birrellay Road. Part of the farm, which has been the main part dissected by the Birrellay Road, has been in the family since 1955 and it was a single lane gravel road. In their application, the applicant has stated a benefit to agriculture, as far as we're concerned, but 200 trucks a day currently, predominantly over a 12-hour period, that's one every 3.5 minutes. To move stock across the road today is a hazard. Moving forward 10 years from now, they're saying doubling 400 trucks. That's every minute and 45 seconds. And as you're aware, there's an REE mine investigation going on in the local area. That potentially is 20 million tonnes of ore over a 20-year period. That's 500,000 truckloads. That's 1 million truck movements, additional to the current forecast. And they're saying we cannot flatly have a stock underpass. They're flatly refusing that. One local landowner has stopped moving stock on the road because it's unsafe. On a Sunday morning, they had 136 vehicles pass through their herd. If I have to hire two people to move stock across the road, I might as well move them from one end of the property, the Selwyn Road, to the other end of the property at Priestley Lane, 5 kilometres. As you can imagine, 1,000 ewes with lambs at foot, that's going to be a day for a picnic. In a meeting in about April, they happily told us that our tank and pump was on the road reserve. What they failed to tell us was the road and the bridge are on our land. They have used a survey, by my understanding, for plus or minus 30 metres. Now, this room is about 15 metres, so somewhere in four times the length of this room is their survey. And they are saying in this application they want to acquire bits and pieces of land, yet they don't know where the road actually lies. They want to block access to some of our water infrastructure, being a pump and a tank. I'm sure you're aware that to remove a pump in times of flood or for repair, a pump that moves water a kilometre uphill is not something you can tuck under one arm. However, they're going to block access to that pump completely. So any emergency water supply will require the truck to park on the road, or to repair the pump, I will have to carry it 450 metres uphill to the access they want to put in. They started out saying our cattle yards were on the road reserve. Funnily enough, as it became clear they would have to do quite some work to repair or replace our cattle yards, the road is now no longer on our cattle yards, and they want to acquire land across the road. It seems that they're happy to acquire land and impede business to suit them. This is just like TAS Irrigation and TAS Networks, state growth bulldozing and bullying landowners and telling the landowner to lie back and think of England. If the council is willing to allow this to go through in its current form, I will go and purchase 5 acres in Westbury and turn it into 6 1-acre blocks, because that is the surveying that allowed to happen. I request that the council delay this approval and ask the applicant to return to proper negotiation and consultation with landowners.
Thanks, Alice. Denise Swan.
Thank you for that. I'm simply going to be reiterating what has already been so well put by my son-in-law. This is a matter that is causing us a great deal of grief. A good deal of it concerns a complete and utter lack of understanding about where the boundaries fall and which pieces of the road are to be impacted when it comes to the noise level outside the home at the top of the hill, and the pumping equipment and water catchment area at the base of the hill on the banks of the rivulet or the Lake Sugarloaf stream. We are concerned because we don't really know how we're going to plan for it, and most particularly when it comes to water, we have no other provision of water for the house. It comes exclusively from that tank at the base of the hill. That is gathered from a spring, and as my son-in-law has already said, is pumped to a reticulation tank above the house. So we are utterly dependent on that for the household supply and also for the watering of stock from the house down to the creek. Because of the alignment of the paddocks, all troughs are in the particular paddocks so that the stock can be watered correctly. Otherwise, they will be without water and, of course, would likely die if we use those paddocks without substantially changing the alignment of the fence. We are, again, as I say, in particular concerned about firefighting arrangements because of the need for the tanker to come into the property through the only access point it has between the house and the creek, which is the gate that I'm told they propose to move. Now, I note with interest that Pitt and Sherry have not had the courtesy of even contacting me by phone or coming to discuss this matter with me to see how it might impact the land that I own, I might add. It's not owned by my son-in-law. They own an adjacent property which abuts mine. And as a result, I'm obviously the person who should be contacted when there is an absolute need to change something on my property. That has not occurred. I've been told secondhand that the gate is to be moved, with the consequent arrangements that will impact the stock, as I've said, the household, which is exclusively watered from that particular centre, and ultimately the firefighting arrangements, which are all centred around the gathering of water at that point. So the worry I have is that we have a great deal of uncertainty, which is impacted by what we believe to be a contested boundary line, which is supposed to accommodate this utility zone of 3 metres. We are uncertain about where that line lays. Our solicitors in Hobart, as late as this morning, were told that they would be provided with some sort of map, probably after there was another in-depth survey completed in 2024, which is a little late for us to make arrangements about a great number of matters. As far as we're concerned, it has been particularly badly handled by the consulting engineers, and I know that the council are in a position where they have to take advice from their planner, and the planner himself or herself may not be fully aware of how badly uninformed we are as a result of the surveyors, the engineers not doing their job correctly. Now, we don't wish to rebel against council's decision, and it shouldn't be seen in that light, but we feel that we have no option should this be passed today without any kind of conditional with regard to the noise the noise abatement that we've been verbally promised, and the total lack of understanding about what prevails with regard to the water. And if that can't be done, then we feel that we've got to approach the tribunal in order to advise them of where we sit and find out just exactly what happens in this circumstance, simply because not the government, not the planner, but the consulting engineer has not done their job correctly.
Thank you. Thanks. Any other? Yep, sure.
Madeline Swan, apologies for the very cute but rather distracting individuals.
We've had worse.
I wanted to focus just quickly, you all have my representation there, which covers issues around noise, cutting off the water supply and so forth. There's probably not much need to go over that. I wanted to focus on the contested boundary issue. It appears to me quite clear that there is a very significant difference between where the boundary lays as it is laid out in the planning application and where the original grant and subsequent surveys would have it. As a result of that, we have sought to go to Pitt and Sherry and asked for survey results, similar to tell us exactly where they feel the boundary line lies. We're told that no, we're not about it. At the same time, my husband and I's property next door, we have been emailed a full plan, survey plan, with boundaries, including all the land that would be acquired. So we're in this perverse situation where Pitt and Sherry is coming to you and saying, here is the road reserve. And then we say, cool, thank you, show us on our title where it is. They say, oh, we don't quite know, sorry. So we have a very, very ridiculous situation here. We will obviously, should this not be wound up to our satisfaction and we have the information, otherwise we'll either hire our own surveyor, go to the tribunal, seek information through court as it should go. I would ask from the council that you, in relation to 1210 Beverley Road, send the application back and simply ask that they engage in more consultation with the landowner, including providing all pertinent information, including title boundaries. And I would note to that end also that will propose no delay whatsoever to the project as it stands. We've been told a number of times to a number of different residents along the road that this project won't be tendered out until at least 12 months from now, so there is plenty of time to engage in proper consultation. We're just desperately disappointed that it appears that Pitt and Sherry are more concerned about meeting their KPIs than ensuring that the rights of private
property owners are respected. Thank you. Okay,
Mr. Mayor?
John, yes. John.
Yes, I mentioned earlier to you that I'd received some other correspondence and would now be an appropriate time to read it out.
Good, John.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Today I received a letter from Saskia Reichfeld, and I'd like to read it out. It's addressed to Councillor Temple. Thank you for speaking with me on Sunday, the 12th of November, 23. We discussed the Beverley Road upgrade and the persistent lack of clear communication from the Department of State Growth. I brought to your attention my second entrance. The entrance is acknowledged on list map, but DSG advised this entrance will now be blocked off by a road barrier despite an existing purpose-built culvert and obvious need to have emergency exit off my property. And despite the fact that DSG advised in their letter of the 28th of September, and that is here, that no further direct impacts on your property are expected as a result of the project, but blocking off my second exit will have a direct impact and result of the Beverley Road upgrade as a result of the Beverley Road upgrade. For example, with high rainfall, my main entrance can get flooded and leaves me only with a second entrance usable for us to get on off the property in an emergency. The tight turn at the main entrance may not support large service vehicles, fire trucks, delivery trucks, etc. And with power lines and poles so close to the main entrance, if anything was to happen to either power lines or poles, we would be cut off from the outside help or getting to and from the property. That's why we use the second entrance. I'm not seeking to make the second entrance into a formal entrance. I just ask that this area, existing culvert, clear of any obstruction as for many years, so it will remain usable in case of emergency. Another issue I touched upon is, although the Department of State Growth's project aim is to improve road drainage along Birralee Road, State Growth has expressed to have no intent to install a road drain between the road and my dam, and thus only relying on the camber of the road to divert runoff rain away from my dam. This is unacceptable considering the scope of the project is to accommodate a widened road footprint and improved drainage, in inverted commas, and for this simple reason that my dam needs water to be protected from road runoff. To date, I have not heard further what, if any, drainage improvements may be planned during the road and my dam. I think that really covers it. As discussed, I hope to be able to bring these concerns to council and await to hear from how council may assist with these concerns. Mr. Mayor, it seems that the process thus far is flawed.
We haven't got a motion on the table, John.
All right.
But thank you.
Thank you.
Right, so we've heard from the representatives. I'm going to ask for a mover and then a seconder, please. So we start this if we go down that path. Councillor Cameron as a mover. Seconder, Councillor Dorner. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Look, I think really just move this for the purpose of getting this motion on the table so we can discuss it. But we've been here before in a similar situation, and it makes me sad that you're still in that situation. I think last time we discussed about communication and we wrote a letter and we tried to help there be some more robust communication, and I'm sad and sorry that that hasn't happened. I'm not sure what jurisdiction we will have to be able to put in place to ask them to, you know, I feel like we've asked them to communicate with you more, and I'm just not sure what authority we have to make that happen, but I'm happy to hear from the other councillors.
Yes, Councillor. Councillor Dornoff.
I echo the sentiments of Councillor Cameron. This generally makes me feel sick, and I think it becomes a lot more real when you've got people come in and speak to the issues, and this isn't the first time that we've spoken to you. We've been to many a workshop, many a council meeting on this. I'd trace back to the first discussion where the first that was noted were people walking through paddocks without permission, raising all kinds of biodiversity issues. It seems like we haven't got much further in relation, and I generally thank the representatives for their discussion today. I note Mr. Gorman's request for a delay of approval. My understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, someone around the table, is that we can't delay approval past the 15th of November. Is that correct?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Mayor. The application has an agreement for a decision by the 15th of November 2023. If we were looking to defer that, we would need to go back to the applicant, seek an extension of time from them and get that agreeance to be able to defer that. Conversations have not been had with the applicant regarding that matter, so I do not know if they would be supportive of an extension or not.
Right. In that case, I suppose we have to follow the recommendations set out by our planners and continue to advocate for consultation between the department and those landowners. I sincerely apologise.
Thanks, Councillor Dornoff. Councillor Dudman.
Thank you, Mayor. First time I spoke to Mr. Gorman, his partner and his family, was at the Westbury Show in 2022 when we were facing this exact same situation with a lack of communication from the state. And we spoke again at the Westbury Show in 2023, and it was the exact same conversation with the exact same result. There has not been a sufficient amount of communication with those who are affected by this development application. Given the time frame and the parameters around that, I do have a question to the planning staff in relation to the disputed land boundaries between the applicant and the respondents. Is that relevant under LUPA in our determination of this development application?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. In regards to the boundary, I make reference to a previous application that Council had considered, which had disputing boundaries. Our legal advice at the time in relation to that application was that it's a civil matter and Council cannot get involved in the boundaries. Obviously, there will be further, and I would understand, and our consultant, Town Planner George, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I would understand that there will be further survey alignment work to be undertaken, and there is also a separate process through land acquisition that would also be undertaken as well, which may set to determine and clearly determine the location of the boundaries.
So, on that basis, I am struggling to find a reason based in fact and law for me to oppose this application. And I say that fairly despondently, because it is highly insulting to me that we are unable to provide further assistance. And to be frank, we shouldn't even be in this position. The state should have stepped up and done the right thing in the first place. And it's just frustrating that as the jurisdiction under the state, we are unable to fight back on this. And reject what is clearly a poorly planned development. So I too would like to apologise to the representatives that have come today. This is a poor showing from our state, and I am very reluctant to be voting in favour of it, but I don't feel I have the grounds to vote against it.
Thanks, Councillor Dunn. Councillor Temple, then Councillor Kelly.
Mr. Mayor, the process has been is flawed. The consultation with landholders has neither been adequate or appropriate. The level of precision is lacking, i.e. where the titles are and so forth. The road currently is not fit for purpose. I'm concerned that after this proposed development, it still is not fit for purpose, because I would not like to try and drive 1,000 sheep across that road. It was a dirt track when the family took over. This development has happened through the years. The developer or the applicant is the state. The state is subservient to the people, not the people subservient to the state. It is highly inappropriate what has happened. They may have us on legislation that we've got to do this and that by certain dates, but it is all totally inappropriate, in my opinion. I think, from my perspective, the best way forward would be that this is left on the table, that council organises a public meeting inviting all the landholders along that road, other stakeholders, bus company and so forth, and the government and everyone involved. And it might take many hours, but there is a meeting going metre by metre or kilometre by kilometre down the road, sorting out the issues, and then everyone goes home. I think that's the role of council in this. We're just placed in an invidious position by legislation. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Temple. Councillor Kelly.
Yeah, look, firstly, I'd like to start by thanking the representatives for a very respectful presentation. It really hurts me that the arrogance of what's happened, it's just terrible. How hard is it to communicate and work with people if you're going to chop bits of land off and so forth? I totally agree with Denise. I think the issue probably lies with Pitt Cherry. I imagine that they're probably putting a tender process and don't want to go over and above to sort the issues out. From a principal perspective, I won't be able to support this.
Thanks, Councillor Temple. Councillor Kelly, that's later. No, sorry. Sorry, Councillor. She was pointing to you, Rodney. I think she had a hand up. I think she was pointing to you, so my apologies.
I will very happily abstain from this, which is a vote in the no, because I don't believe we have the information before us that we need. The only alternative to that is if we simply decide to defer the matter and have, as has been pointed out, the decision is by default approved. One way or the other, it still ends up the same. It will end up before the tribunal, but I'd much rather us definitively saying it's not acceptable. I am just going to touch on a few of the issues as to why I believe a decision can't be made today, one of which is the response from Pitt and Cherry, Mr. Fotheringham, on the on a certain date. Made a comment on page 115 of our agenda that roadworks will not occur on all of the land that is to be acquired. There'll be some land buffer areas to ensure the separation of property boundaries / fencing to trafficable areas. They made a similar, even though I wasn't on council at the time last year when that decision was made, the representatives at the time on that issue said there were survey pegs 8 metres out into the paddocks. And there was some thought initially that was just to set out the job that they were doing, but it was turned out that they were actually acquiring land on which no works were being conducted, which is the same comment being made here, but we don't know what that land is. There is no, unlike stage one, they actually had some sort of reference or comment to it. This time we appear to be unaware. In my view, the Land Acquisition Act, which is brought up all the time as to tell us that it's none of our business under Looper, clearly says that where adverse possession is being acquired, that compulsory acquisition, I should say, is the vehicle being used, then it must be for the authorised purpose. It can't be just, we'd like that bit of land. And so, in my view, that land that's being acquired is for, and it was said in the first application, a buffer area to provide separation between the fence and the road carriageway, somewhere to run off. Well, have we assessed that land, never mind these tiny little slivers of land, have we assessed that land in terms of conversion from, as I say, it must be for the authorised purpose of utility, and it's no longer agriculture. Yeah, there might not be a vehicle on it, but clearly that use is no longer agriculture. It's now something else. I can't see any definitive assessment because we don't even know what that area of land potentially is. It could be inside the line, and that takes me to the point of the 3-metre line. I understand the legal advice that was mentioned earlier, but and I don't know whether the circumstances are the same, whether or not the boundary's in the right spot. What we have here is a situation where the Looper regulation or the planning scheme regulation relies on 3 metres from a known point, because if the point that you're starting with is unknown, how can you possibly know whether that slither of land impacts on agriculture or anything else? It is... If the survey is out by 2 metres, for example, it's a pedantic point, but if you're out if the line could be in the middle, or it could be 2 metres that way, or it could be 2 metres that way, 3 metres actually falls inside that plus or minus 2 metres. You don't know what you're actually assessing. It may or may not be relevant, but the thing is, you need to know what it is to know what your starting point is. As a general point, I find it very curious that the application that's addressed to us from Pitt and Sherry has a focus on how this will help agriculture in the local area, but when you look up the state government's Northern Road package, it very clearly states in there that the purpose of these road upgrades, not just limited to Birralee Road, is for regional interconnectivity. And another point I'd touch on is I disagree that, you know, saying that the same amount of traffic will go up the road and it shouldn't make any difference whether you're getting your mob of cattle across the road. If you actually widen the road corridor to include land from either side and you fence that, so say, for example, the road might be fenced off a chain wide at the moment, but after what you've done, it might be two chains wide or whatever, your stock are going to be out in that road corridor for a much longer period, and you have a much, you know, it's far easier to get stock across a 10-metre gap than it is across a much broader gap. To say nothing has changed shows a serious ignorance of farming operations, in my view. As another example, I don't agree that this road actually complies with the exemption under 4.25 of the scheme. I believe that to comply with the exemption, you need to come under the terms of the exemption completely. It doesn't say, and I know that won't be agreed to, but it does not say that you are, to the extent that you will comply with the exemption, you're exempt. It says use or development. And an example I'd give is, if you had a bend in a road and the 3 metre bit, you know, if you've identified where it is precisely, takes a little slice like the top of an egg off the bend, and we, for whatever reason, acting as a planning authority, said no, native vegetation, whatever, we said that's unacceptable for that to encroach into that area, you're not going to build the road with that piece missing. You're going to have to go back and redesign the road in the area that you've exempted. So I'm saying that the two portions are not separate, they are part of a whole, one part of a whole. So for me, all the other exemptions that I'm aware of in the scheme are self-contained. They don't have bits that are exempt and bits that aren't exempt. If you're dealing with a fence, it either is or it isn't. If you're dealing with home accommodation that's got to be less than 40 square metres, it is or it isn't. And I think I'll leave it at that because I am seriously irritated. I think it's a pathetic, shoddy job. Let's get it out there. And I think, you know, the issue of the access, I absolutely believe you can't take away someone's access without properly addressing, if it's lawful access. You might have perfectly valid reasons from a safety or road safety, etc., for site distances, for wanting to move it. But I believe absolutely you need to address that with the parties directly affected and come up with a solution before you're just telling them that's what you're doing and see you later. So for those reasons, I will be abstaining.
Thanks, Councillor. Now, about 5 minutes ago, there was a question. I thought I must ask the planner that, but then numerous other things that you raised afterwards. I know the GM's got a comment to make, and I don't know whether, George, whether you've got, if you want to talk about some of the things Rodney raised, or you don't, I don't know. But
just maybe start on your comments, George. I believe that the exclusion that Councillor Sinfield's referring to is actually covered in the assessment that has been made by a professional officer. So if I could ask you to speak to that, or is excluded from consideration?
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, if you could clarify maybe that particular point. Is it the exemption or the...
The last bit I was addressing?
Yep. Oh, some of it there, Rodney. There's some of it
about the exemption.
Oh, well, I'm asserting that the exemption needs to be self-contained. It needs to be, and I understand the words say up to 3 metres, and we're interpreting that as saying, okay, if it's beyond that, we'll include that. What I'm saying is if you had a bend in a road and you had the line, that's the 3 metre line, and the road went round here or a drain or whatever it is, and we said, okay, we're assessing just this little piece, this sliver, and for whatever reason we rejected that, then they're not going to build the road with that piece not done, are they? They're going to have to go back and revisit their exemption and say, we need to shift the road to here or come up with some other design, retaining wall along here, whatever it is, right? So I'm saying that the exemptions are all basically self-contained. The wording at the start of clause 4 says use or development that meets the requirements. In my view, only a portion of the use or development in this case and the subsequent use meets that. Because
no more explanation. Let George answer.
So the two are not two separate things. They're so conjoined that they're the one thing.
Yeah. Okay. Through Mr. Mayor. Next good question. I guess there's two parts to the question that I could probably answer. Firstly, we are of slight benefit to have a fairly recent decision of the tribunal in 2022, which I'm sure you're most likely aware of, where they had an appeal relating to effectively the same development, which was an extension or upgrades of a section of the Tasman Highway down near Hobart Airport. It was approved by council, the particular works. One of the appeal grounds was that the exact point that Councillor Sinfield's raising, which is if the works are outside the scope of the exemption shouldn't be applied and the application should consider the full development standards of the scheme. The tribunal found that the way that they approached it was that, no, you can rely on the exemption for the works that satisfy that exemption and then only assess those parts outside the exemption. So that's the approach that we would be adopting as planners, given that it's a very recent decision. And we do look to these decisions whilst they're not precedents at all. They are case by case. It would be remiss of us to ignore their most recent decision on that basis. The other part is that DSG tomorrow could start all of the works that they wanted to within the exemption. So they could commence those works now and then come back and say, okay, well, now we're actually going to apply to have those works that are outside of the exemption. So I can understand your point, but there would be ways if they want, because there's, you know, driving along Birrerley Road now, there are some roadworks occurring that obviously meet the exemptions. They're doing that without a planning permit because they don't need one. So if they were to do the works and then apply for those other works, then I think that way you can. There's a connectivity or a nexus between the exemption working and then those works that are outside.
If I very quickly...
Very quick.
The very point I've just made, you seem to be confirming, because that they could go along and cherry pick out all the bits that don't have the slivers of land involved, but they couldn't do that bit at the moment, could they? Because the road, there'd be a piece of the road missing, for example, or a drain or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Right, you'll agree to disagree.
But the other point is, I respectfully disagree. In my view, the case down near Hobart Airport took as a given the approach that
We won't get into
it, as George has said, but not to be debated whether it was right or not.
Thank you. Councillor Loader.
Thank you, and I would like to thank the representors too and the planners. I am going to echo what's been said. I'm just really disappointed that you haven't been consulted with. I think I just flicked back to when a similar motion was here, which was the 8th of November last year. Very similar notes on this page of my notebook. I think when the people with the most vested interest in the improvement in the road are questioning what's happening, we would be very foolish not to take notice. I hear what's been said about the fact that it fits the planning scheme, but there's just too many questions for me. I can't support it, particularly around the school bus. I've been contacted by residents outside of this issue about the bus and safety for children. The other issue I just find totally incredulous is that there isn't going to be a stock crossing, and we spoke about this on the 8th of November last year. I don't get it. It's not logical. It's going to seriously impact a business and a family and an income. And I could go on, but lots of this has been said already and the meeting's running really late. So I do concur with everyone's concerns. I really thank you for what coming. And I also thank those people who weren't able to come but who put in a representation as well. But I can't support it. It's not a holistic approach. It's bitsy, and to me it's just ad hoc. Thank you.
Thank you. A couple over here, Mick. Sorry. Councillor House or Councillor Dudman, you're both sort of hands up.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Again, I would like to thank the representatives, the ones that are here and the ones that have sent through their written reservations about this. I came here expecting this to be a reasonably straightforward sort of process, and my mind has been changed, I've got to say. I'm not likely to support it. I'm disinclined to support it, based particularly on I think when you read words on paper, when you see things that are written down, how it might impact on people, that's one thing. But when it's face-to-face and you can see the genuine concerns that are there, to me, there are too many unanswered questions from my point of view to support it. I'm not inclined to go against planners' advice very often at all, and I really thank them for the work they've put into this. But from where I can see, there's been a distinct lack of consultation with the stakeholders that really should be consulted with. There are some concerns. As much as I'd love to see that road, the safety of the road improved, and at the end of the day, that's what the objective is. To me, there are just too many unanswered questions, and I just think there's more detail required, you know, from everyone's point of view. So I feel I'm unable to support the proposal as it stands.
Thanks, Councillor House. Councillor Dudman.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to add a second contribution, given some of the debate that has happened. And I appreciate Councillor Sinfield's contribution, I really do, and the arguments that he has put forward, because they are well thought out and well-founded. However, and I mean this with no disrespect, if I was arguing that in the appeals tribunal, I would not be comfortable of my level of success, and actually I'd be fairly certain that I wouldn't be successful. In reference to the 2022 decision by TASCAT, and I understand that precedent isn't prescribed and that it doesn't have to be followed, but it is a settled law on that and a settled question that has been answered. And the suggestion that suddenly TASCAT 1 year later might change their position based purely on what is shaping up to be the vibe rather than a legal definition is just false. And that is the concern that I have. I am as angry about this development as every other person in this room. But we are sitting here under the legislation that we are given. We are subordinate to the state government legislation. If you don't want to be subordinate to that legislation, I would suggest either backing candidates at the next state election that will change that legislation or running at the state election itself. But until one of the two happens there, we have to follow the legislation that we have prescribed. We are not a body of government that has primacy and authority as the state and federal jurisdictions do. we are wholly reliant and dependent on following the decisions that are prescribed to us through the planning scheme and through LUPA. So on that basis, I think all the councillors that are casting a vote today, whether it be for, against or in absentia, need to consider whether they are making the decision based on the law, because if they do not, then quite frankly, we will go to TASCAT and we will lose the appeal. And if I had an ounce of consideration that we would be successful in this appeal, then I would 110% vote against this. But I'm more confident, actually I'm 100% confident, that the state would win an appeal, which would only mean that we have cost our ratepayers $20,000 to $30,000. Not to trivialise it, but it's a dump point and a half. And we would have got nowhere, and we would have still had the same result for our representatives. So I'm still going to be voting in favour of this, despite my reservations and despite my unhappiness about the process. But I understand my responsibilities, and I'm happy to defend that position and have those arguments with the community, but I can't step outside of my power that has been conferred to me when I was elected to this table, which is conferred solely by the state. I have to stick within LUPA, and that's what I'll be doing, and I would encourage other councillors to make that consideration too.
Thanks, Councillor. John Ramsey.
Yeah, so to the point made by Councillor Dudman, if council makes a decision not to approve the application as recommended by our planner, then they will need to form a decision to refuse the application and identify grounds for refusal, and council would then need to find a representative to attend an appeal if that was forthcoming, which won't be a council officer or one of our consulting firms that's present today.
Councillor Kelly.
Just for the record, I'm totally in favour of the upgrade of the highway. It's more to do with the way in which it was handled, the consulting side of things. I just don't see it being that hard to be able to communicate and work through problems with the landowners that are being affected. And so that's, you know, I just think a clear message from council. If it doesn't get up, I think one of the key messages is that it was very poorly handled.
Councillor Donohoe.
I am on the same lines as everyone else, but I sit here, usually sit over there, but I lecture the same as Ben, usually in the lines of warning about voting against planning advice. In this particular sense, I don't have enough information to make a decision, and I believe our community deserves that our council fight when an unjust is occurring. We're seeking consultation individuals, not many. I'm sure the state would rather mediation than go to the tribunal. And if I'm wrong, I'll sleep easy that we have the council have tried and subsequently where the legal costs.
Thanks, Councillor Tibbitt.
My belief is that cost is an irrelevant consideration in a planning matter for a start. But I'd like to... I downloaded this... off the internet from a very recent case that our consultant town planner was actually involved in, and that was a decision made early last month. And at paragraph 79 it says, and it's discussing exemption, not the particular exemption, but straight out of the same exemption table. A better interpretation of clause 4.14 is that it applies to uses that fall within the categories of no permit required, permitted or discretionary in the use table, but by reason of their scale, as reflected by the satisfaction of the requirements of clause 4.14, a person carrying out those uses is exempt from having to obtain a permit. That is, the exempt and inconvenience of obtaining a permit is avoided where the scale of the use is sufficiently modest. So all the exemptions are meant to reflect very minor, very simple, very straightforward things. Do you fall within them or do you not? And I repeat my comment earlier that to Ben's point is that, Councillor Dudman's point, is that in my view, reading of the decision about the Hobart Highway upgrade near the airport last year simply took as accepted that interpretation. It didn't actually go into whether or not, no one, as I recall, articulated whether or not that was the correct way of assessing it. Here is TASCAT themselves last month saying what I just read out in part.
Point of clarification, Mayor. The clause that Councillor Sinfield just referred to, is that relevant to this assessment?
I said it was out of the same use table.
Is the...
it's not home occupation,
is
no.
The, thank you.
Right.
Exactly.
Thanks for that, councillors. Councillor Temple, we're going to wrap it up very shortly. Yes, Councillor Temple.
Just a quick question. Is the process thus far flawed or not?
Well, that's a hard one for us to discuss when we're actually sitting on the table, when we've had planners that have assessed it and it comes forward as a planning development item, isn't it? So is it from what we can understand from the residents that are out there, they would say absolutely it's flawed. But when we sit here, as Councillor Dudman has said, with our planning authority hat on, it is pretty blinkered approach. For my contribution to this, in 5 years since I took this seat as mayor, pretty much five years to the day, potentially.
Oh,
I voted against the planners twice. Today will be the third time that I can vote against the planners' recommendation, mainly because I have to put myself in the position of the landowners out there. I can relate to them. I can actually understand it. And we sat here in November of last year and told the state that they needed to. I wrote to the state saying that they needed better consultation. And if this is a wake-up call by us actually rejecting this, then that is something that I'll be able to put my hand on my heart and say, you know, we've represented the community. Fully understanding what you're saying, Ben, and I would support you 100% of the time, but not on this one. I just can't. So that's my two bobs worth. I think everybody's had a good conversation around the table on this item. So if you're happy, I will actually go back to the seconder of the motion. Sorry?
I think Tash wants to say something.
Tash wants to say.
Tash, did you want to say something? You can.
I guess bringing back 12 months ago, we were having the same conversation around this table in relation to the application. That application was approved and is progressing. We now have the next section and stages of the Burley Road upgrade before us. From the application that has been received by council and its assessment from the planners, we have assessed the application and deemed it to meet the criteria of the planning scheme. In saying that, if you are looking at any form of refusal for this, you need to have planning merit for that. And that brings back to the discretions in the planning scheme. What are your grounds for refusal based on your planning merit? So I guess I just want to remind you of that. Our assessment has been that we have the information that we need to be able to determine the application, and that planner's recommendation has been put forward to council. So,
appreciate that, totally appreciate that, and have sat here in the past and thought about how we think about the reasons why we reject things. Sometimes we've actually, because it's the community will sometimes. Really appreciate that. And it's probably an undefendable position that we may go to, and it may cost $20,000 to $30,000. I can actually say in 5 years I've only cost the ratepayers about $10,000, so that's all right. But anyway,
40 now.
No, 40 now. But anyway, sorry, that's just the way it's going to be on this one from me. I'm going to wrap up, go back, because we could probably go around and debate things for a while. Councillor Dornoff, the seconder of the motion.
Last thing for me is just to highlight, from what we've heard from around the table, those that do vote in favour of this share the same sentiment of everyone around the table. They just have a varying opinion on their responsibilities as a planning authority. I just wanted to highlight that as fact.
Thank you. Councillor Cameron.
Thank you.
You started all this, Councillor Cameron. You moved it.
Look, I will be supporting this motion as it was presented, but that's not to say that I don't understand the issues that you've raised and wish, like all hell, that I could help you with some of those things. I think that the likelihood of this changing going to, it's going to go to a tribunal, and the likelihood of the vote today, it's probably going to be voted down here. But, my message is to Pitt and Sherry and any other consultant in this kind of environment is, we are a community of people who are good-willed people, just talk to us and we'll help you through these kind of things. So my apologies to the representatives that will probably feel let down from my decision, but understand that it is really because I'm sticking to the rules of the planning authorities.
Thank you, Councillor. So I put the motion. All those in favour of the motion, please say aye and raise your hand. Councillor Cameron, Councillor Dudman. Against, Councillor Johnston, Kelly, Loader, Dornoff, Temple, House. Abstaining is Councillor Sindrill. Thank you. Motion did not pass.
Do we need to?
We do.
I think we require over to you, John.
Yeah.
Yes, you don't.
Just suspend the meeting for a few minutes while the council still work up some grounds.
Right, I'm going to suspend the meeting for 5 minutes, maybe 10. I'll ask the public gallery to leave the chambers before we consider our response. Somebody prepared to move, somebody prepared to second. Oh, Rodney was up, sorry, Rodney, was that quick? Second up.
New motion.
Councillor Loader was up first. So, Councillor Sinfield has moved the motion.
Nothing on that, happy to support.
Thank you, Councillor Loader, second it, right.
There'll be no endorsed plans or anything like that.
Councillor Temple actually left the room, but. And I'll vote. Right. You're right, Wes. All right, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? So, Johnston, Kelly, Loader, Dornoff, Sinfield, House.
Loader.
Oh.
Just hold on for a second.
Temple.
We're just voting to approve the alternate motion.
Roger Sinfield, name Ray Loader is the seconder.
Yep. You were sort of an or as well.
Vote in favour?
Because I haven't asked for the noes yet, so. Okay. Councillor Temple was a yes. Just come in the door with his hand up, John. I don't think it will. Against? Councillor Dudman, Councillor Cameron. Thank you. Motion is passed.
You said Councillor Temple the second time, I think.
Oh, sorry. Councillor Dudman, Councillor Cameron. Sorry, my apologies, Rodney.
Thank you.
Well, the recording was
Temple. All that was it.
Past 6:02, with Councillor Temple not participating.
Okay.
Well, maybe Councillor.
You missed the vote, John.
I was stepped out of the.
No. Yeah. So sorry. I tried to hold the vote a little bit, but it doesn't matter. Got it. Righto. Well, congratulations, gentlemen. That was democracy at its best. Probably not right, Ben. I understand where you're coming from, but it is what it is. Moving on. Development and Wrigley Services Council submission to public consultation draft development plan. We need a mover and a seconder. Was there something we needed to change on this one?
Why, we had an amendment.
You did.
Well,
was Rodney going to move that?
I was just going to move it with the first dot point on page 252 of our agenda removed. Yeah, move it with the change.
Move it with the change, yes. General Manager?
Yeah, it's recording.
We are recording, yes.
So just to clarify, Councillor Sinfield has moved the recommendation that's different to the published agenda with the removal of bullet points one from the top of page 252 in the published agenda. I think that's correct, isn't it, Councillor
Sinfield? Yes. Or it could be dot point six overall.
Same result. Yep.
Thank you. Seconder was Councillor. Seconder, Councillor Dudman. Thank you. Councillor Sinfield as mover.
Look
with your microphone, please.
I think this is very well put together, and we have limited time frames and all that, but I think it addresses
how I would view the world. I don't think it's the right direction to head down for the state government. And so letting them know in this manner is a good thing. I think it's very well articulated, especially with the removal of that one dot point.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Dudman.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm pleased to endorse the submission from this council, and I think it goes to show we've spoken a lot about this today, the lack of listening ears from our state government. The president of ELGAT, Mick Tucker, said just last week that we have been inundated with legislation to consider from the state, and time again, whether it be a fire tax or changes to the development assessment systems that we use, they are failing to adequately provide an intelligent and cohesive response to improving the frameworks that we work under. Time and time again, they take local government for granted, and it is extremely disappointing to see. So I am more than happy to join the fight back against this poor governance to make sure that we keep our local voices and that we keep working for the community.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Loder.
Thank you. I would like to thank planning staff for putting this together. I think it really captures the position of our council and the discussions that we've had. This is something from my own submission that I wrote. I said, this framework is truly terrifying in its lack of detail, but with enough detail to render councils and communities voiceless and developers totally in charge. That it just can't happen. Already people are upset that so many things are pushed through and the community don't feel that they have a say because we have to go with what the planning regulations say. This takes it to the next level where developers can decide if they want to have things like the cable car assessed by other people who aren't democratically elected. It doesn't even really say who these people are going to be. So I support this motion wholeheartedly.
Thank you, Councillor. Open up for discussion. Councillors, House.
I support it too with that amendment. The words I've heard a few times here are local. I mean, we are local government, and I think this has the potential, as proposed, has the potential to take local out of local government and render us voiceless in many ways in our community, voiceless. So I support the amended letter, and well done for putting it together in the fashion you did.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Cameron.
Thank you. Look, really, I do appreciate the work that's gone on into this, and it's probably no surprises that I might have a little different view to some others here, but I guess, in my opinion, councillors who act as a planning authority as well as their local representatives, it can be pretty conflicting, and you can see that particularly in the, 2 hours we've spent debating the last item. And it is tricky with the complex and contentious issues because, you know, there's so many things we want to do and say and help people with, but we are sort of restrained a little bit to that planning authority. So with that, I can see some benefits. But the devil would be in the detail. There isn't a lot of detail. And my view is I don't want to completely close the door on it without being able to sort of explore it a little bit further.
Thanks, Councillor. Open up for discussions, councillors. No more discussions. From my point of view, thanks to the staff for putting this together based on the feedback that West Councillors gave you, so I appreciate that. It's a well put together document. Happy to support it. Councillor Kelly.
Yeah, look, the only thing I'd add, I'm not sure how well circulated this is out into the community. I had one person approach me, but they're not from this municipality, but they're writing in submissions. I just wonder whether it's sort of just virtually gone to councils or whether it was advertised publicly.
Can't answer that, councillor. I know.
Through Mr. Mayor, what has been in the papers, councillor, so I don't think it's confidential. I think it has been in the community.
Very good. Any other discussion, councillors? If not, Councillor Dudman, the seconder. No, Councillor Sinfield as the mover.
Not really. All very well articulated by everyone.
Very good. Put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye. That's unanimous. Thank you, councillors. Beyond Corporate Services, Council Audit Panel Minutes of Meeting. Somebody like to move? Councillor Dadman, thank you.
Thanks,
Councillor House, thank you. Councillor Dadman is the mover.
Happy to endorse the minutes. It's always a pleasure to sit on the audit committee with our wonderful staff and those who come in for this purpose.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor House.
Likewise, to you, Councillor Dadman. It's a great pleasure to be on that committee and to work with all these people throughout the council and do such a great job. It's an accurate reflection of the audit panel meeting, and no issues of any sort of concern identified, so happy to endorse it.
Thank you. Any discussion, councillors? Councillor Sinfield?
Just a question. Item 23. It said the meeting closed at 10:18, and then there was an in-camera discussion about a particular item. Was that held at the time, or you mean it was? Does that mean it was recorded, or that it was, you know, zoomed, or what did that actually?
The camera means off the record.
Dark box.
So, through you, Mr. Mayor, I may allow Councillor Dudman and House to comment on that, but that was a comment that the audit panel chairman, Mr. Andrew Gray, added in to the minutes to reflect a discussion that he had had with two councillors.
On indulgence, Mayor, I am not prepared to divulge that conversation publicly, but it was relevant to the audit committee, and I feel it's important to keep that confidential.
Thanks, Councillor. Anything else, councillors? Councillor House, anything to add? Councillor Dudman? No. Okay, put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
That is unanimous. Thank you again, councillors. Corporate Services 2022 Financial Statement Independent Auditors Report. Somebody like to move? Somebody like to second, please? Anybody? Councillor Sinfield? Seconder, please. Councillor Dornoff, thank you. Councillor Sinfield? Nope. Councillor Dornoff? Right, open up the discussion, councillors. Councillor Sinfield?
Yes, Justin got anything
microphone, to say? Please.
Has Justin got anything to say today that would be helpful? Because he comes and sits at the table and we usually send him away without having had any input.
Well, he's looking well. Every month I see him, he's looking well at the end of the time.
Well, through you, Mr. Mayor, I'd just say, I guess, that the audit process went well, and sort of we had the same audit team this year through the whole process, so that certainly helped get it done as per the audit plan. So, no real issues identified by the auditors.
Very good. Thank you. General Manager?
So, just to contribute to Justin's comment there, I guess there are other councils within Tasmania that have not received their audit reports. I think that the smooth process is a credit to the staff that were involved. So well done to them, and the public will have an opportunity to comment at our annual general meeting planned for December, if they should choose to.
Thanks, General Manager. No other conversations. So I'll go back to Seconder, Councillor Dornoff. Anything to add?
Not
for me. Sinfield? Nope. Put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye. Raise your hands. That is unanimous. Thank you, councillors. So, motion to close the meeting. A mover and a seconder, please. Councillor Oda. Councillor Dudman. Any comments? Obviously not. All those in favour, please say aye. Raise your hands. Unanimous again.